Welcome to another episode of RMLD's Current Insights. This is our every other week podcast where Julie and I meet with individuals both inside our organization and outside of our organization to talk about issues that are relevant to you, our customers. Today, we are lucky to be joined by Tobias Sellier. He is a Senior Director of Media Relations for the American Public Power Association, or APPA, as we like to call it. They have about, I think, 1,400 members such as RMLD. We're a member of it as well. But we are known for being public power as opposed to investor-owned utilities. We talk about that sometimes in our other sessions, what the difference is between National Grid and Eversource and MLPs like RMLD. But we want to focus on Tobias. So, Tobias, welcome.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Good. So as our audience knows, we keep this kind of informal. It's just it's a little half hour discussion in terms of interesting topics. But we like to introduce our guests, or more importantly, we like our guest to introduce him or herself. So just a little quick background of, who you are and what APPA does. Kind of big picture.
Sure. So, again, I'm Tobias Sellier, and I'm the Senior Director of Media Relations and Comms at APPA. Been here for 19 years, so I'm about to hit my 20 years at the association, which is exciting. But I've obviously seen a lot of changes over those years in the industry and at the association. But just to back up, APPA itself is the National Service Organization for Public Power Utilities. So we're based here in Washington, D.C., and we offer a variety of services to public power utilities like RMLD. There are about 2,000 public power utilities in the country. As you said, Greg, about 1,400 of which are members of our association. So in terms of the services we provide, it's conferences and education resources for those folks. It's news and information services. We have a magazine. We have a newsletter that's getting ready to go back to a daily cadence with all the news and information from the world of public power and the electric utility sector. And as being, obviously based in Washington, D.C., one of our primary charges is to advocate on behalf of public power before federal policymakers. Yeah. So at APPA, I work on the advocacy team, and I'm the association's primary media relations contact. So I handle, press inquiries and outreach to the press to help tell the public power story and move the ball in terms of our advocacy priorities on behalf of our members like RMLD. And then additionally, my team is responsible for, our website, our social media presence, and various other programs like our awards and our annual Public Power Week celebration. Yes. Yeah. So things like that.
One of our favorite days. We love our celebration every October.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's kind of the background there. Hopefully
it's good background. Yeah, and I think for everybody to kind of get a sense of what the association does. As you mentioned, based in Washington, D.C. area, but supporting a lot of us. And while all of us are a little bit different because we're tailored around the communities that we serve, there are a lot of common elements. And, Julie and Tobias and I were talking just for your listeners out there and those who are watching us. We're in the middle of a massive transition in the energy space. Certainly in New England, but on a national basis and in reality on a worldwide basis. And what used to be very regional businesses are now interconnected in ways we had not imagined. But the issues we also face are similar. So, Tobias, just, kind of big picture, some of the, again, from the media relations perspective, but you see the big issues. So, just for our listeners, and we've talked about several of them before, but, from your viewpoint on a national scale, what are some of the big issues that I'll call it the electricity or the electric market, more than just public power, but we'll focus on public power in a minute, and there's a lot of overlap between the two. But what are some of the big issues that, we're all
sure,
trying to figure out?
I think one of the, yeah, absolutely. So some of the top issues that I'll mention are, responding to climate change and efforts to lower our carbon emissions across the whole sector. And we've done a good job over the years, and we want to continue on that trajectory, and also, as we were talking about before, this is a three-legged stool here. You can't just talk about sustainability without talking about reliability and affordability. Those are the three real tenets of public power that we need to keep in mind as we continue to lower our carbon emissions across the sector. We have to keep power affordable for our customers, and we have to keep the lights on, right? We have to keep that reliability track record up, which is a good track record for public power. Cyber and physical security remain top of mind, you know, in this day and age, unfortunately, for the worst, you know, the electric utility sector is in the crosshairs. It's a target for those who want to do harm to our communities and our country. So that's something that we need to stay on top of. I'll also mention, you know, permitting reform. That's something big that we're looking at right now, making sure that as we move towards some of these new sources of power that are lower carbon emitting, we have the infrastructure in place to move that power, usually from places that are far from population centers,
more remote,
to those population centers to get bumped down and to serve customers. So yeah, those are really kind of the top three. I'd say we have other more niche advocacy priorities.
Yeah, and you open up with the key message of in the context of you know, climate change, you know, our mission remains constant, right? And we basically kind of recasted our mission recently. It's exactly what you talked about, right? First and foremost, reliable. The second element, you guys call it affordability, we call it low cost. And then the third one is non-carbon, which is the compliance obligation that we talk about as well. And so what Massachusetts did a couple years back is their 2021 climate bill, and for the first time put us as MLPs in Massachusetts with a non-carbon target. So 2030, 2040, 2050. And we're, as you mentioned, like most public power, we do very well on all those different counts. But first and foremost, keep the lights on. Let's talk a little about the cybersecurity stuff. You know, one of the things that you guys do is with the conferences and the listservs and the education programs is to continue to educate, help us as your members, right? But us as entities that are serving our customers in terms of you know, protecting our network from cyber attack. And we look at it both, as you mentioned, right, physical as well as cyber. So if you want, do you want to just dig a little bit deeper into some of the, you know, maybe on the physical side, you know, we're very careful in terms of what we share in terms of cybersecurity, in terms of how we, the defenses we put up, and we constantly do that. But, I want to dig a little bit deeper into it without exposing too much. But I don't know if a couple additional comments on either cyber or physical security.
Yeah. So as I said, cyber and physical security are really top priorities for our association. And one thing I'd like to mention, and this is mostly on the cyber side, but it touches a little on physical. So we've had a really long-standing partnership with the Department of Energy that has resulted in some cooperative agreements with them, which are essentially grants for us to help our members help themselves on predominantly the cybersecurity front. So, you know, through this partnership, we've rolled out a lot of things for our members, you know, a scorecard that can really help them benchmark themselves and find areas for improvement. We've done a lot of, as you said, training and exercise opportunities. I think exercising is one thing that is really huge on both the cyber and physical side, whether it's in a community or at the state level, kind of running through some of these scenarios, you know, during blue sky times, so that when, you know, that stuff does happen, you know, who the people are that you should be communicating with, whether it's your state folks or your local law enforcement or whatever the case may be, to kind of drill these things to work on them. So we've helped out with some of that. Through our grants, we've also been able to offer things like on-site assessments, you know, to send some of our industry partners on site with some utilities to help them look at their cyber posture and see how they can potentially improve it. And then lastly, I'll highlight that, you know, we've rolled out a lot of things like guides, playbooks, and various reports that really do highlight best practices. And I'll note that I just heard in a meeting earlier today that we're getting ready to roll out an updated version of our physical security guidebook. So that will offer, you know, a lot of tips for public power utilities on how to secure their assets and be as safe as possible. I think the point you brought up, Greg, is a great one in that, you know, it's something that public power utilities don't want to talk about a whole lot for obvious reasons. Like, you don't want to be saying, hey, you know, we're really good at this, but not so good over here. Like, why would you want to paint, you know, a target on certain aspects? But it's a story we're challenged to tell, because I think public power utilities generally do a good job of it. But something that people don't really know is that, you know, across the country, there's something like 50,000 substations, right?
Right.
How do we do a good job of securing all of those? We cannot afford to Fort Knox each one of them, right? We need to take kind of what we call a defense in depth approach. We look at what assets those substations are serving, what would unfortunately be the best targets and things that we need to secure, and we invest accordingly in a smart and targeted and surgical way to make sure that we can, you know, secure those assets first and foremost.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, and we take that very seriously. You know, both from a physical perspective, but also from a cyber perspective. And, you know, the cyber perspective, we literally 24 hours a day, somebody's trying to get into our network. And so it's a constant battle. Our IT guys think it's kind of an interesting puzzle to fix. So, you know, we are pleased that they have passion to say, hey, I can play this game. It's a serious game, right? We take it very seriously. But, you know, we want, as you know, from all the different people you talk to, but it's important that at our organization that we, you know, we have people that are passionate about the different elements of the utility that they work on. You mentioned,
I think another critical piece is information sharing, right? Like, utilities should not be afraid to say, hey, we're seeing this kind of a threat on our network, and share it up through you know, industry partners and to our government partners to be able to identify these threats and quickly share actionable information across the industry so that we can all be on the same team on this. I think that's a critical component.
On that sharing also, you guys are in D.C., and there's several agencies that we're plugged into on a national level based out of D.C. that you know, constant updates in terms of threats and things to be aware of and holes to patch and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of sharing that gets done internally, but you're right about that. And that goes back to your comment about public power being, it's a team effort, right? It's not, we all have our territories that we work in and we're willing to share. You mentioned also, you know, kind of thinking about the increase. I want to just talk a little bit about permitting, just briefly, partially for our customers to kind of understand. We are literally in the process of moving back into the generation business, right? So when we started, we started in Reading, Massachusetts. We call it Station One. It's part of our campus right now, the center of our campus. But we used to generate electricity to do streetlights, and so we got out of that for economic reasons primarily, you know, 60 years ago. But we are last year recommendations of our team to the Board of Commissioners, which approved it, but we're going to get back into the generation business. But that requires land, that requires permits, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, just talk a little bit about, and we're not unique, right? There are a lot of other in our New England region, but, you know, how you put more it's distributed generation, right? As opposed to being big centralized stuff, it's much more distributed. But just talk about a little bit about some of the things that you guys are doing. Just quick nutshell, because we got a lot of stuff to cover. But just things that you guys are doing at APPA to help us on the permitting, so our customers know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most of it comes down to us looking to our federal policymakers to really streamline the rules for permitting and siting.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that the processes are as concise as possible and understandable to the public as we go through the process, because, you know, we need to make sure that as we build this stuff out, that the people who are paying for it are the people who are reaping the benefits, and that, you know, it's done in a fair and thoughtful way, because, you know, nobody wants necessarily infrastructure running through their backyard. But at the same time, you know, we all want to be able to charge our phones every day and you know, have power in our house. So we need to get this figured out, and we need to do it relatively quickly to move the needle on sustainability.
Yeah, and I think, Tobias, on that exact point, we went to a permit meeting last night for some assets that we're trying to put into our territory. And, you know, it's about education. Well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, particularly in areas such as ourselves where we're well built out, right? So we don't have as many options. It's not wide open. We're not expanding into open land or open territory. And you know, but what we're reminded over and over again when we go to planning meetings, et cetera, and somebody, you know, in the neighborhood has a question, right? And sometimes it's, hey, I just want to know more, and sometimes I'm concerned. But I think it goes back to that education piece. So, you know, one of the things that we're currently trying to do, and some of the materials that you guys provide as well, is education, like, you know, battery storage systems or higher voltage utility lines, or, you know, whatever it is, just, you know, making sure basic element, right? You know this, and I know this, safety for the public, safety for our employees, and then reliable, low-cost, non-carbon, as we call it. But we have to deliver power, and, you know, this transition to more non-carbon means, and it, you know, it's under the guise of electrification. We got to supply it somehow, and it requires.
Yeah.
It's not microwaved quite yet. So when I say microwaved,
that's right.
You need physical assets to make that happen. So that permitting is really important. And I just, as an encouragement to our audience, you know, Tobias and he's just the face of a very large team at APPA. But you know, part of our goal for our customers is to educate them. This is why we're doing it. You know, these are the safety protocols we put in place. You know, and our goal is to be invisible to the extent we can. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize the value of public power utilities until they move from, like, we'll get a lot of customers that say that they moved out of IOU territory and they're just in awe of, you know, how much lower the rates are. And I, that happened to me personally. It's something you don't think about until you're involved with a public power utility, and they're really wonderful.
Yeah, it's a different world that we operate in, but we all have similar challenges. So I think that's the other key point. One of the other things that, again, just for our audience to know. So we talked about the cybersecurity issue. We talked about the permitting and ability to grow assets to handle the load growth. Actually, you know, kind of a related question to that. In our territory, Tobias, we look at we're coming out of a decade of basically flat growth. Up here in New England, in the greater Boston area, pardon me. But with electrification driven primarily by the adoption of EVs and air source heat pumps, which air source heat pumps is a little bit more novel here in New England. And EVs, I think, are relatively speaking novel across the, you know, different pockets, obviously, but it's still early adoption. You know, that electrification. So we're in, you know, our forecast basically have our load doubling. From a usage perspective, kilowatt hour sales in the next 25 years or so, 20-25 years, and then our demand or the capacity will be 70% higher. But as you kind of, you know, you have a little bit different view. I want to talk about statistics here from APPA perspective in a minute. But do you see the same thing happening more broadly across the? You know, I mean, every region's a little bit different. You know, I know Phoenix has got incredible growth just for, you know, purely population growth. But I don't know, just kind of interesting, just some interesting observations for you in terms of places that are you know, crazy growth and other ones that are stable. And I want to kind of think about it from the perspective of electrification in addition to the population piece. Any thoughts? Just kind of, you know, things that stuck out in your mind?
Yeah, I think a lot of communities are in the same boat as you with, you know, flat, but with that extra load due to electrification efforts.
Yeah.
We do see communities like Phoenix, which is served by a public power utility, that are exploding in terms of population and building out their communities. And one thing that's making that extra complicated right now are some of the supply chain issues that, it's not making headlines these days the way it was with, you know, baby formula and stuff like that. But distribution transformers, right? For your listeners, you know, those cylinders that sit at the top of your distribution poles, they're almost impossible to get right now. We're seeing our members absolutely have so much trouble. You know, lead times went from weeks to years.
Yeah.
They've had to slow and stop some of the build out in these communities. Yeah. They've had to kind of slow down refurbishing projects.
Replacement programs, same thing for us. You know, exactly right.
Maintenance. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that has been an extra wrinkle. You know, you add electrification and then, you know, distribution transformer shortages and, we've seen a lot of problems, and that's another one of the priority issues for us right now is getting our arms around the supply chain issues and trying to get our federal partners to take more action there.
Yeah, do you see on a legislative, just kind of extend that thought, a lot of the transition and change that we're seeing right now is driven by legislative and regulatory changes. Like in Massachusetts, for us, it's that 2021 climate bill. And that you know, as we called it back, you know, it was two and a half years ago. But it was a seismic change to us. And it's we had a sense of what it meant when we first looked at it. You know, we were part of we had, again, through APPA and through our efforts locally, et cetera, you know, we had the ability to influence it somewhat. But the question is, do you see, from your view, any significant either tightening of the regulatory targets or softening or maybe staying the same? I mean, it's a big question because it has a huge impact in terms of how we think about it. But and our just so you not to put you too much on the spot, you know, our view is that we don't see them softening. They'll either be where they are or they'll tighten. I know what you know. You got a bigger view. So what? How do you kind of see that thought, that question?
Yeah. I could get over my skis real quick in this area.
Yeah, both of us can. Yeah, so go ahead.
yeah. But you know, in my opinion, what public power wants to see is regulatory and legislative certainty.
Right.
In our business, you know, we are building out things that have a 30-year or more useful life that we need to finance, right? That our customers end up paying for. We cannot have the rules change every few years and get people stuck with a generating asset that gets legislated or regulated out,
and it's only half paid for. Right. Yeah.
Correct. So that is really what we're advocating for. Yeah. We want that certainty. We don't want the rules to keep changing.
Yeah.
And I think you're right in terms of the ship sailing on things relaxing. I think it's more. We're going to be looking to tighten things up a little bit and continue to move forward. And again, the industry's done a great job of tightening its belt and lowering emissions, and we're going to continue to do that. We just need to do it in a way that's thoughtful and keeps in mind affordability and reliability.
Exactly. It goes back to those what we call the three key tenets, right? In that order: reliable, keep the lights on; affordable, right? Low cost, we call it, and being compliant and non-carbon.
We call it the three-legged stool, kind of the same thing. You go overboard with the sustainability piece, or next thing you're falling off.
You're gonna fall off the stool. Yeah. Well,
exactly.
It's important that our customers, the audience here understands, the driver. There's always technological change and trying to make things more efficient and et cetera. Sometimes internally we call this a moonshot, right? We don't know how to get to, to double it. And as you say, investments we're making now, they better be functioning 30 years from now or 40 years from now. And we've got substations that we continue to maintain that are 40 years old. We're getting ready to replace those substations, but those decisions were made 40 years ago. And so that stability of it. So that's, we look at that too. I don't know if you've got many statistics to kind of help educate some of our customers. They know a lot about us, and we remind them, on a regular basis, but it's always good. But Julie, do you want to try and just, a couple of the, I'll let you kind of hit the statistics question if you would.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
With Tobias.
So outside of major adverse events, like severe weather events, customers of a public power utility are likely to be without power for less time, and that's 76 minutes a year compared to 138 minutes a year for customers of private utilities. And then in Massachusetts specifically, public power utilities pay between 20% to 30% less than IOUs. And I think that those percentages might be even higher.
Yeah, probably closer to 50, at least recently for us. Right. Exactly right. I think you're exactly right.
Yeah. So in light of those stats, so what are some of the reasons why public power utilities are considered to be more reliable than IOUs?
I think there are a lot of factors, but I think one of the primary ones is that, utilities, public power utilities are specifically in the business of serving their friends and neighbors, right?
Exactly right.
Their line workers typically live in the community. They know the system. They can move quickly to address issues. They're extra motivated to address those issues. Because as I said, it's
their
friends
house.
And neighbors. Right. Or somebody you go to church with.
Exactly,
or somebody you know you're going to see, at the baseball game on Saturday.
Yep. Community.
So that's a unique motivation that I think goes a long way toward reliability. And I think it's also, we should also note that public power utilities, not having a profit motivation, the same as investor-owned utilities, in terms of having to pay out shareholders, they are more likely to invest in their systems to keep them up to date, to keep them safe, to keep them reliable, and to invest in technology that can help on the reliability side as well.
And even less ground to cover, too. You know, if there's a storm, it's a smaller service area than some of the larger ones.
That's true.
That's a good, the closeness. Tobias, that profit motivation. So, you know, what we explained, I assume this is pretty universal, but we call ourselves not for profit. So we're not a nonprofit.
Right.
And the reason why we try and make that distinction, we do try and earn a return. And there's it's in the low percentages, like typically less than 8%. But all of that goes back into the infrastructure, right? It is intentionally structured so that that becomes part of the capital budget for the following year or years. You know, we have a long horizon. But I assume that concept is pretty universal across all of public power, yes? That there is a profit?
Yeah, that is.
The profit, but we don't call it profit. We call it net income, but it's back into the business. It doesn't get –
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, I always say not for profit when I'm talking about public power utilities, and I think that's true. And I think it's important to note that doesn't mean that they're not trying to run a good and sound business, you know.
We actually do, right. I mean, that's –
Exactly. You want that bottom line to look good so that you can reinvest in your system or, keep the money in the community. And I think that is a big differentiator with investor-owned utilities.
Good. Keep going.
Yep. So just more on that, the economic benefits. So can you give more examples of the economic benefits of public power utilities versus the IOU counterparts?
Sure. In addition to kind of some of the things we talked about, a lot of utilities also give back to their local communities into what we call pilot payments, payments in lieu of taxes that go back into the community. Mm-hmm. So that's another common vehicle for reinvestment of any, extra money that comes into the utility. And then I also always think about line workers putting up holiday decorations. That's always visual image. When I talk about the in-kind ways that public power gives back to their communities, and I think that's great, and that's always a picture that I have in my head. And then I think outside of the economic benefits, it's really important to note that public power utilities are super active in their communities in other ways, right? Yeah. We talked a little bit about promoting conservation, electrical safety, energy education, and I know that's something that RMLD is really active in and does an awesome job at.
Yeah, we have a lineman who was a guest at a library story time in a couple of days.
I'm very excited
about that. Yeah,
love that. Identify the next generation of public power workforce, right?
Right.
Exactly. And on that note, our utility, while we're in New England, our mix is about a third boomers, a third millennial, and a third X. So we've got a very aggressive intern co-op program. We're actually now with help from Julie and our HR team, we're actually reaching into the high schools as well. So it's partly education, but it's partly, hey, this is a fascinating industry to be in right now.
Absolutely. And I think when people think about jobs with public power utilities or electric utilities in general, you always default to the line worker, right? But people don't know that there are a lot of awesome jobs to get into, whether it's, Julie working communications, doing communications, or, on the engineering and operations side, or, there's just so many environmental studies and stuff like that. There's so many different jobs aside from, the line workers, which are great and they're super important.
And even during storms, so we did a little internal presentation because you think when there's a power outage, you think mostly of the line workers who are obviously critical, but there's a team of engineers, there's the dispatch team, there's customer service. So it's really all hands on deck
in those
situations.
So one of the things we typically do – Tobias, as we get to the end of the discussion, and thank you for your time, by the way.
Are we already there?
Yeah, it happens quick, man. It happens quick.
Oh, man.
What we like to do, Julie, I'll let you, we have a fun question. Right. So go ahead, Julie. I'll do the close after the fun question.
So, yeah, we talked obviously a lot about professional and your role, but we want to know more about you as a person. So what outside hobby or activity do you engage in that you think brings a unique perspective to your professional life?
Yeah, so I'd say in addition to being an avid reader, mostly of sci-fi lately, I am a complete and total technophile, right? So I'm an early adopter of just about every piece of technology. I drive an electric vehicle. I have a level 2 charger at my house. I was like one of the first people in the world to get a Nest thermostat back in, I guess, like 2011.
Yeah,
like
way
I
back.
Was tracking that before it came out.
Yeah.
And so I was so early on that actually the Nest people sent somebody to my house to actually install it. And I was geeking out about, you know, the efficiency and like building Excel spreadsheets, looking at like the savings and stuff like that. But yeah, other than that, you know, just all types of consumer tech. I'm the person who's walking around his house talking to Siri
of
and
course.
Alexa. I guess I shouldn't say those out loud. But, you know.
Talking to the computer.
Turning lights. Yeah. Turning lights on and off and doing stuff like that. So relating that back to my line of work and being connected to the electric utility industry, I think it really does give me kind of a unique perspective as a utility power user, so to speak. And I think it really does help the work that I do on behalf of public power.
That's great. Tobias, again, thank you so very, very much for being with us today. It's fun. You know, we greatly appreciate the work that not only you do at APPA, but, you know, we interact with APPA a lot, but just express our many thanks to the whole team. Again, Julie mentioned, right, there's the front-facing people, but there's a whole team behind the organization. So we greatly appreciate it. And for those of you customers that continue to listen in on our podcast, we thank you for being here. And as you know, right, questions can be directed. Julie has our – what's our email address?
Podcast@rmld.com.
Podcast@rmld.com. And we would love it if you would share a link or let people know that they should check in. We get better and better every time. Tobias, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.